Shadowcast, Flash episode number 7. This week's story, Bradley Sands is a Dick, by S.T. Gulick. S.T. Gulick may have died along with James K. Polk in 1849 while trying to save the world from an invasion of extra-dimensional racist cauliflower. But that didn't stop him from going on to write several novels and screenplays, including but not limited to Muffy, or A Transmigration of Selves, For Fear of Poking One's Own Eyes, and Chakra Kong Part 1, The Exquisite Sound of One Hand Falling Off a Turnip Truck. He's currently working on the second part of the Chakra Kong trilogy, busier than a three-legged cat trying to squeeze blood out of the tip of an iceberg. Gulick apologizes in advance for the third installment, as it will probably be shorter than its title. And now, Bradley Sands is a Dick, by S.T. Gulick.
Sick Semper Tyrannus!
Chase's massive fist came down hard on the podium, splintering the wood a good deal more than he had intended, and filling the dank sewer air with debris which sparkled like fairy dust in the dim glow of the sparse assortment of berry-yellow light bulbs. This was the third podium pilfered that month, so he was trying to go easy on it without it seeming that his piss had been drained and his vinegar used to complement a salad. Beneath him, a lake of lobster-fisted youths pumped their mighty claws in the air and chanted,
"Sic Semper Tyrannus! Sic Semper Tyrannus! Sic Semper Tyrannus!"
He looked out at the pasty, pimple faces of the revolution and spoke with conviction.
"No longer shall we live in the shadows! No longer will we be forced to sustain ourselves on the garbage of the normals! I say here and now that we are not inferior monsters, and if the normals persist in treating us as such, we will show them what being a monster truly means."
He brought down his fist once more, and with it the podium. The crowd let out a high-pitched roar of concurrence, and chanted again,
"Sic Semper Tyrannus! Sic Semper Tyrannus! Sic Semper Tyrannus!"
His bloodshot eyes darted over the crowd as he paced back and forth, sweat dripping from his crimson cheeks. Baring his teeth, he raised his fists and chanted with them. Behind him, the jogger twisted and cried. The stranger's forehead was still damp with dew from his morning run. His face, paler than the white stripes on his jogging shorts, was contorted into a mask of panic confusion. Only 15 short minutes ago, he was smiling and waving at his little girl as she climbed the oversized steps of the school bus. 12 minutes ago, he had finished his daily protein bar and embarked on his morning jog. Now, bound to a weather-beaten picnic table in the midst of an angry mob of ites, he could only think about how late he was going to be for work. Ignoring the noises of irritation which continuously spewed from his hostage, Chase basked in the ethereal glow and flexed his muscles subtly.
"Looking out at all of you, I don't see lobsters. I see the next step in evolution. I see free men who are ready to do what it takes to break free from the chains that society has foisted upon them. This is our day, brothers. Today will go down in history as the day the ites reclaimed their liberty."
The hobbledehoy revolutionaries cheered and jumped clumsily around like clockwork gorillas in the dash of a moving minivan. The sweet smell of justice clung like pungent cider to the back of their throats as sugarplum fairies flew wildly about their heads, frantically waving inspirational posters like flags. The jogger, unable to bear the ambiguity any longer, gathered his strength and bellowed over the crowd,
"Excuse me, but what the fuck is going on here? Why did you tie me to this table, and what are you all doing in the sewer?"
Chase cracked an amused grin and turned.
"Oh, I'm sorry. I suppose this is a tad unusual. Allow me to explain. We are sick of the way you people treat us. Your abuses have gone on for far too long, and now we're going to take back our lives by any means necessary. My unfortunate friend, you have been chosen to be the metaphorical hymen of justice, and we're going to bust you." Why me? What the fuck did I do? I don't have a problem with the ites. I always thought you guys got a bum deal." "Sure you did. That's why you almost called us lobsters just now. Tell me, why should we be second-class citizens just because our DNA reacted differently from the radiation than yours did? You shouldn't. Just like I shouldn't be ritualistically brutalized for the same reason. Nobody knew that the II controllers contained radioactive capsules. Everybody was at risk. Some people mutated, others didn't. Nobody should be punished for the way their bodies reacted. If you want to get revenge, go after the fucking Japanese or the government. It's their fault, not mine.
The decoupage roach wings of Chase's shirt shimmered like death's fingernails as he placed his enormous hand on the jogger's arm.
True. It is not your fault that we were forcefully evolved, but that's not the problem here. We're proud of the fact that we're stronger and smarter than you. However, it is your fault that we were shunned from society, fired from our jobs, taunted and victimized. Whether or not you participated, you're guilty of sitting idly by and letting it happen. This isn't about you personally, and please do accept my apology for the inconvenience. This is simply what happens when a society allows itself to indulge in rampant bigotry and hate crimes. It's bad enough when one country pays another to take their radioactive waste, and the other bottles it up and sells it back to them in the guise of family-oriented gaming systems. But you people had to go and make it worse by persecuting everyone who was affected by it. Your petty jealousy at our physical prowess dragged us from the spotlight of professional sports into the darkness of the sewers. A society so jaded, heartless, and insecure doesn't deserve to exist. So today we're taking a stand for justice and making it possible for the Idas to be the blessing it was meant to be, rather than the curse that you people have made of it. But I liked it when you guys were in professional sports. Bradley Sands is my favorite baseball player ever. I always thought what happened to him was bullshit.
Chase's lips curled into a cruel smirk.
Bradley Sands. That toe-headed motherfucker owes me $50.
The crowd began to murmur in agreement.
Yeah, that guy's a dick. He owes me money, too. He donkey punched my sister. He gave me anal warts. I'm pretty sure he ate my cat.
Near the back of the crowd, one young man slammed his Slurpee onto the ground and yelled,
Get him!
And soon they were all gathered around the breakfast table, pulling the helpless jogger apart like a cheap chocolate bunny. Chase stood apart from the rest, giggling as the cold black blood clotted on his lips.
So this is what fruition looks like, he thought as he slinked away.
Countless months of repeating adaptations of Mein Kampf had drained him of all his authentic fervor, leaving only the knowledge that it was his destiny to lead the revolution, change the world, and become the new Messiah. Ites all over the world would worship him as a god. Normals would panic and kill themselves at the mere mention of his name, and that was just the beginning. Someday soon he would clutch the whole world in his indomitable mitt, and when he did it, it would squish like an overripe kiwi. Given that this episode was so short, I've decided I'll read you S.T. Gullick's full bio, which is quite a story in and of itself. I was born within the walls of an Irish castle on October 21, 1681. The master of the house was a Mr. Edmund de Switch, who had taken a keen interest in the art of alchemy. Though a complete failure in every aspect of his work, his incessant fumbling with God's video game led to severe consequences for all who surrounded him. Mutations of mind and body were fairly common in this household, which ultimately resulted in my departure at the tender age of one. Having left my thousands of brothers and sisters behind, I traveled the world in search of wisdom and new forms of mayonnaise. As I have always lived in the shadow of emphatic irony, I found my next home within the walls of the base of the Australian Illuminati. For many years, I inadvertently soaked up millions of mems of above-average information which further mutated my consciousness, creating an intellectual wanderlust which eventually drove me to Great Britain, where I discovered an odd sect of apple-obsessed chaos worshippers. Within their temple walls, my third eye opened, and I met the goddess in all her majesty. I found myself face to face with Iris, who, finding me cute and less annoying than her other saints, sainted me on the spot and introduced me to her good friend Timothy Leary. Timothy, in turn, introduced me to an electric cheeseburger, who eventually talked me into taking over the mind of Ronald Reagan and forcing him to run for president. In the body of the Gipper, I became hooked on crack and reinvented Reaganomics, condemning the world to hundreds of years of masochistic frivolity. America was not without problems, but my throw some crack at it and it'll go away policy seemed to work well for the most part. Then, at the 1988 CIA Christmas party, everything changed when I drank some punch that somebody had spiked with LSD. I suddenly realized the extent of the damage I was doing, and I began to feel guilty. When I came down, I decided that this guilt was a problem, so I threw some crack at it. I eventually got tired of crack and bored with taking orders from the cheeseburger, so I did the only sensible thing. I abandoned the president's body and dedicated my life to making sure that Broccoli will never again seize the reins of the world. For those of you who are not personally familiar with my dear friend Eris, I must say that her reputation as a trickster is not overstated. One night she left me without a trace. The next morning, when I awoke, I found that I was not only missing two appendages, but I had also gone all squishy and pale and swollen to many times my normal size. I searched for many years for a way to heal my wounds. Luckily, one day I bumped into the Electric Cheeseburger at a dive bar on the outskirts of Birmingham, Alabama. I regaled him with my story. He was very sympathetic and even forgave me for abandoning my post. Apparently, he hadn't always been an Electric Cheeseburger. As it happened, he had also been searching for a way to recapture his previous form, and had recently found a solution. Sadly, the price of that transformation was much too great for his moralistic outlook. Only large-scale human sacrifice would release the power necessary to get me into the area of the cosmic swap meet. Having been the president, my hands were already stained with the blood of countless innocents. Nevertheless, I hold the belief that murder for personal gain is always wrong. You should only kill for fun or revenge. Otherwise, you're no better than a soccer mom who drives a Hummer. I was still pondering the best course of action when I remembered my old VP, who regularly indulged in mass murder, but only for the sake of monetary gain. All that potential energy was just going to waste, so I did some things I can't talk about for obvious reasons, and eventually gained the power to transcend life and death. I am now able to manipulate my physical form at will and travel through all 56 dimensions. Having achieved this, I ate a taco. I wrote my first book, Muffy, or A Transmigration of Selves, in 1999, and subsequently misplaced it. This novel was followed by several screenplays, which have also gone missing. I rediscovered Muffy hiding in a shoebox in my closet labeled Salvador Dali's Ringquist. I took that as a sign from Eris to finally unleash it upon the world, and so I did. This has resulted in a certain amount of unwanted notoriety, which is non-conducive to the lifestyle I prefer. Fortunately, shape-shifting affords me a certain privacy, which even paparazzi can't destroy. In the coming months, for fear of poking one's own eyes, and Chakra Kong Part 1, the exquisite sound of one hand falling off a turnip truck, will be unleashed. That is, assuming I don't misplace them. I still need covers for all three of the Chakra Kong books, so let me know if you are an artist who may be interested. This episode was produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Thanks for listening. Stay well.